Ireland is getting older. That presents a unique set of challenges that we, as a nation, as a population, are going to have to rise to. I'm Peter Kavanagh, and this is The Old Country, a podcast about ageing in Ireland brought to you by Active Retirement Ireland, in association with the Community Foundation, as part of the UN Decade of Healthy Ageing. Welcome to The Old Country. I'm Peter Kavanagh. Active citizenship is often talked about when it comes to older people, but often we may be missing a beat and not really including them where we think we are. So to talk about this and other aspects of active citizenship, I'm joined today by Ciarán McKinney of Age and Opportunity. Ciarán, thanks a million for joining us.
Oh, and my pleasure.
Let me start by asking you, what do you think active citizenship means in the context of older people?
Well, firstly, I guess I think active citizenship can take many, many forms, but it really is about participating, whether that's participating as a volunteer or indeed participating, you know, by keeping up with current affairs, or indeed by, you know, being active in our communities, whether that's the Tidy Towns, the Vincent de Paul, the Meals on Wheels, or the so many voluntary led and delivered services that take place across the country, and they would grind to a halt if older people weren't involved in them. So I think that that's one of the most important things we need to bear in mind. Then I think secondly, you know, organisations like yourselves, Active Retirement Ireland, that's another form of civic engagement, because by participating and offering peer support, peer enjoyment, that's another way that we can all feel more integrated in our communities and thereby enhance our voice as older people.
Mm. So it's as simple really as just taking an active hand in your own community. And that's a real key form of active citizenship. It doesn't have to be on any great scale or doing huge things over the scope of the whole country or anything.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I think we can sometimes like overcomplicate what active citizenship is. Now, you know, I happen to be a member of the board of a number of organizations, and that is a very particular form of volunteering, but that's not for everybody. Mm. But I still also volunteer with another couple of gay organisations as part of, like, delivering, for instance, rapid HIV testing to other, you know, gay men, bisexual men. And a bunch of us as volunteers are well into our 60s and working alongside a bunch of other guys who are in their 20s and 30s. And that for me is brilliant because, of course, it's an intergenerational project as well. And I think that that is something we shouldn't lose sight of either as older people, that we have so much to offer from our lived experiences, but equally we have things we can learn from younger generations as well. And I think we should be cherishing those opportunities so that we're not ghettoizing ourselves as older people.
Yeah, the intergenerational solidarity, it's very often portrayed as a one-way street.
Yeah.
And we see, whenever we hear about intergenerational solidarity, it's often accompanied by images of a younger person teaching an older person how to use a computer or something like that. Or, you know, on occasion, an older member of the community imparting some valuable life skills. But really, it's very symbiotic. And it has to be, really, for it to work.
Absolutely. And I think also, though, that we need to very much then include people who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s, who, particularly if their parents, may feel they don't have the time for a lot of other things. But in fact, we need to remember that intergenerationalism isn't just about 16 and 18 year olds with 60 and 70 year olds. There's a whole range of other generations in between that. And we should be making it more possible for more of us to be more active, to be more creative, to be more visible more of the time.
And there are organisations out there active every single week, every single day in communities all around the country that display exactly this kind of intergenerational solidarity, this kind of intergenerational interaction, and this kind of active citizenship. But maybe, you know, they don't realise that they're doing it. The likes of Tidy Towns, things like that, where they go out, they want to take an active hand, they want to improve their community, and you have people there of all ages, people there from every background. I know in the Tidy Towns in my village where I'm from, some of the people who come out every Saturday, they're only in their 30s and 40s, but they're from the direct provision centre in the village. They're asylum seekers, but they're getting involved. I mean, that's a form of active citizenship in and of itself, even though they're not actually citizens of the country.
Well, I completely agree. So, like, where I live in Rialto in Dublin 8, we have an informal group of the four streets in my neighbourhood. And so at least twice a year, we do a community cleanup. And Dublin City Council provides the rubbish bags and indeed the tools, the hose and all of that kind of stuff. But equally, there's an evangelical church in the neighbourhood and they do, I'd say, a cleanup of the linear park two or three times a year. Now, I don't know one of them, but we still see them out and about every now and again. And I think, you know, A, it's happening. We're not always aware of it. Similarly, like I belong to Flanagan's Fields, the community garden in Rialto. And I can guarantee you that a load of those people are active in other things as well, not just gardening, you know, because it's about caring for and being part of our local community.
Is there a certain type of person that's driven to volunteer, do you reckon? Or is it something that anybody could pick up? They just need a little shove in the right direction.
I certainly think it's something that any of us can pick up. I think sometimes we have inherited some kind of class-ridden image of what it is to be a volunteer. And quite often that's an image of an older, often better educated and somebody of relatively comfortable means. And actually, I think some of the community movements in the inner city have totally upped that, you know, and kind of said, no, hang on a second. We can all volunteer. We can all be active in our communities. And I think the Fatima Mansions group before, you know, Fatima Mansions was totally transformed. But it was those grandmothers and mothers who were keeping that community going. And similarly with other communities like throughout the country. So we should really be, I think, starting from a community development perspective. I particularly like asset-based community development so that we're looking at what we have rather than what we're lacking.
That's really nice. That's a very positive way of looking at things.
Yeah. It's called ABCD, asset-based community development. And so it really is about, sometimes you might just decide, well, let's map out exactly what it is we have here, which can be, of course, all aspects of our physical environment, the built environment, the natural resources, like in terms of like parks, etc., and indeed, you know, the various community groups, etc., and whatever else might be there. There might be a local health center. You could have a library, you know, certainly. And I regard, I mean, for me, some of the better food shops for me are an essential part of my community.
It takes all sorts.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you're in a good part of the world for food shops. You know that Dublinites really, it's experiencing a revival. That seems like one thing you could do is kind of maybe map out and clarify what each group is doing in the community and encourage cooperation and maybe eliminate people doing the same thing twice on different days, which is something that can happen when community groups aren't talking to one another.
I really agree with you. I think that communication is key. I think there's something about where we can learn to either not continually reinventing a wheel, but replicating a model that somebody else has been using successfully. And the only way we're going to really get good at that is if we're communicating and if in fact we're sharing our learning. And that's really important.
And maybe that is something, and I'm sorry to shift away from the asset-based community development, but to just maybe look at that communication as something that perhaps has been lacking from the sector over a number of years. Like, there are NGOs out there working incredibly hard to try and improve society and improve the lots of citizens and residents here in Ireland, and maybe just not speaking to each other and not seeing the gains that could be gotten if they were communicating a little bit better.
Yes, and also recognizing that who I might think of as a citizen might be different from you or somebody else thinks of as being a member of our community, and we should be trying to be as inclusive as possible, you know, so that we are, in a sense, harnessing all of the energy and all of the skills and talents that could be available to us as well as like working towards a more integrated, more community, like a better, more integrated community.
Yeah, well, on paper, it seems to make sense, doesn't it? You know, exclusion doesn't benefit anyone.
Yeah.
Is it still a major issue? Are we still a long way from inclusion as we'd like to see it at the moment? How have you found things over the last number of decades? Do you think that there's improvement in that?
Well, I laugh when people talk about the good old days, because I think Ireland was a horrible country in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, even the 80s. I've regarded myself as being extremely fortunate in that I came out as a gay person in the late 70s. my family were completely accepting of me, and indeed most of my friends. And so therefore, I've been active as an LGBT activist mm-hmm. ever since then. I never felt the need to go away, as many of my friends did. Now, I did actually move to the UK, but that was to study. You know, it wasn't yeah. because I was gay. And I think our you know, history of either locking up, hiding, or exporting people who didn't fit, thankfully, I think that that's becoming less of an issue. And so, like, for instance, where I live, there are lots of young women, and I'm talking about teenagers, and they're pushing what are clearly their kids in buggies. It's not, I used to naively think it was their younger siblings, mm-hmm. and then somebody said, no, that's probably their own child. But at least they're living in the community,
yeah.
and there's no stigma attached. And I'm not saying there aren't issues about teenage pregnancies, but at least it's now not being treated as a situation where you had to lock up that young girl.
Yeah, well, it's better to have an issue to discuss than to brush it under the carpet.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, most of them look, I mean, certainly from what I can see, they themselves look healthy and well. The kids look really well looked after. So, you know, I just think it's less and less of an issue, and that these people, younger women with their kids, are integrated in their families and the community. And yeah, so.
So there would have been a lot of people who would have suffered that, that shunning from society, that stigma that you were talking about, who are now older people and maybe looking to sort of get involved to become active citizens in their older age. Is it difficult for someone who's kind of been at the blunt end of frankly an awful lot of misdeeds by the state to give back to society?
I think it can be challenging. So for instance, Age and Opportunity, we commissioned and funded the Visible Lives study. Mm. We funded the Gay and Lesbian Equality Network to carry out the study in 2011. We published it in 2012. And, you know, it was one of the things that demonstrated that while there was a cohort of people who did feel connected in their community, many older LGBT, it was lesbian, gay, bisexual and trans people. Mm. We, to be honest, I hadn't even heard of intersex at that stage. So it was LGBT people. Like, and quite a number of them felt relatively estranged from their local community. So that is an issue. Mm. And then it becomes even more of an issue if suddenly a lesbian or gay person or a bisexual or a trans person suddenly needs to access something like residential care. Mm. And I think that that's an issue that we've not actually, you know, looked at enough in society. But it's not just LGBTI people, you know, I would say, mostly in residential care, our sexuality is invisible, whether we're gay or straight. I think it's still the case that even if a married couple go in, there are some units where, in fact, they can't be accommodated. They
yeah.
have to be segregated.
Yeah.
And I think that there is this kind of sense that we cease to either like be sexual, or we cease to desire intimacy at some stage in our lives, which I think is terrible, you know.
Yeah. It is, and like we've had a few guests on the podcast so far where we start talking about how it seems insanity to say that because you've passed this age on the calendar, you're no longer disabled. You know, the disability section won't be looking after you. You'll be getting your payments from social protection yeah. now, and it's infuriating, frankly, and dehumanizing that just because you've passed a certain age, or because you need something, you need a little bit of help to get on with your daily life, you need a carer or you need residential care, that you're no longer seen as fully human. Because to be desired and to be desirous of other people, that's a part of the human experience, it's a part of the human condition. And we're essentially saying, and it's institutionalized, it is, you know, it's not individual people that are saying this. It's not a decision being taken by the manager of that particular nursing home to say, oh, you can't have sex, or you can't be a sexual person. That this is institutionalized. It's there. It's in the structures that we have. And yeah, it's dehumanizing. And frankly, it's really, really, really infuriating.
Well, I mean, I think it's societal ageism, and combating ageism is one of the key priorities for the UN Decade of Healthy Aging. I mean, interestingly, the HSE issued what I thought was a wonderful guidance document, I think in 2014, which was a notice to managers of designated units, where, you know, saying, you know, it is good and proper to be encouraging relationships between residents as long as you are clear that there's consent, you know, and the ability to consent. But the fact is, as a society, people snigger and make fun of older people all the time. You know, and it's still one of those areas where that form of humour is still accepted. I mean, I haven't come across overt anti-gay or racist humour in many, many years, thankfully. But it seems to me it's still OK to make jokes about, as we get older, about all the things we lose, like we lose our memory, we lose our, we become incontinent, we lose our continence. We, there's all of those jokes, you know, we lose our looks, etc., etc. You know, we're constantly losing our keys. And I remind myself that I have always struggled with knowing where my bloody keys were for my entire life, you know. But like recently, we got funding at Age and Opportunity. We got funding from the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission to hold a series of citizens' assemblies about that other age thing that just happened, which was if you were 70 plus, it was suddenly you had to cocoon.
Yeah.
So that all of us who are, okay, I'm not yet in my 70s, but all of us as a society who were 70 plus, suddenly there's this new age. Oh my God, you're the cocooning population now, irrespective of how fit, healthy and independent you may well have been.
Yeah.
And there are, like, I'd say I'm healthier now in my 60s than I was in my 40s, you know, because, well, in my 40s, I didn't cycle every day. And, well, OK, pre-COVID, I was cycling every day into the office and back out again. But, you know, I think there are lots of us who are probably fitter, both in terms of mental and emotional health, as well as physical health now than we might have been in earlier years. And then suddenly to be told, well, you know, you are vulnerable, you are, you know, you've got to stay out of society. I think that that was terrible. I think it was I think it was well-intentioned. I'm not saying it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think it was an unfortunate... I think the messaging was very unfortunate.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty much representative of what a lot of the members of Active Retirement would feel about it. And I think, you know, people kind of willingly went into it at the start, and then the messaging just, it wasn't great from the offset. But I think tellingly towards the end of that period, when we start talking about reopening society, a lot of the narrative was around, oh, the young people have given up so much, and the young people, and without wanting to pit one generation against another, it's just sort of, can we just please acknowledge the fact that you shut away a huge portion of the population for a number of months, that they had no access to anything, and for many people that was incredibly detrimental, you know, because not every older person is living in, not every person over 70 is married, is living in a comfortable situation, is happy enough to be at home all the time. That's very much a stereotype, and yeah, I agree with you. While it was well intentioned, I think you're basing, they say, you know, hard cases make bad laws, but you have to understand the individual requirements of people and the individual situations people are in when you do something as drastic as that.
And I do think coming out of COVID, we're going to have to deal with this whole concept of deconditioning, and that for many older people, that may well be literally a loss of muscle mass because of lack of exercise, but also loss of confidence. And so I've been chatting to a number of older people who now say they're too nervous to drive their cars more than a couple of kilometres because of, you know, being kept within a shorter geographical area for like a year and a half. I also do think that many younger people have also suffered, you know, during the COVID. And, you know, when you think about it, how do we learn to be people when we're younger? Well, a lot of that is we're learning from being out with our mates.
Yeah.
You know, if I think about my days at university, I mean, I was in college most days. Whether I went to lectures or not is a completely other story. But you know, I was hanging out and having a brilliant time as well as learning.
Yeah, well, I have to agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, my 4 years at university getting a 3-year degree were the best of my life.
Like, yeah.
You know, I'm not sure I paid enough attention, but you certainly learn more in those social situations than you do through any other means. And it's the same thing, you know, we learn it as children. And I suppose the big question is, have we unlearned a lot of that behaviour over the last number of months when it's just been us, or maybe us and our families, but it's just been, you know, smaller groups of people. You're not as socialised as you where when you go to the shops now, you're not having conversations with strangers because everybody's masked up. You don't really recognise people. That might not be the man from down the road, so I won't say hello because it could just be a stranger in a mask picking up bananas in the food shop. Have we unlearned those? It's a big question. It's something that's going to be hard to deal with. You mentioned that you're going to be doing a number of citizens' assemblies about that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, so we hosted 5 citizens' assemblies in the month of June. We had, of course, planned them as being regional, and then with COVID, they became online. So we invited people to join in to talk about their experiences of COVID, and in particular with cocooning. We commissioned a video, a Vox Pop, with 6 older people, 3 men, 3 women, from Dublin and around the country. And that's available now on the Age and Opportunity website and on the Age and Opportunity Facebook and Twitter. But so the Vox Pop was really just to stimulate the discussion with these groups of people. And the messaging has been very, very clear that older people, many of them felt that they hadn't been consulted with when this policy was being, you know, developed. And that also we were treated as a homogenous group, yeah, when in fact, mm-hmm, you know, we wouldn't say everybody between 20 and 50 are the same.
And so, yet we do it with 70 plus. And
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
There's 3 or 4 distinct generations in there. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I guess one of the other things that I think, you know, we need to regain is the sense of leadership among older people. And Peter, you know this from ARI. I mean, many of the active retirement members have trained with us as physical activity leaders. Mm. And so many of our pals are, in fact, you know, in their own active retired groups, active retirement groups. And they're the people who then encourage their peers to be more physically active. Now, that's a form of active citizenship, and we often wouldn't consider it, but it is. You know, it's also a great way to have fun. And of course, it's keeping us more physically active as well.
Just a couple of weeks ago, we had episode 1 of this podcast with Anne Drury, and one of her introductions to getting active, to volunteering, was to become a PAL, a physical activity leader. And so many of the key leaders in so many different community groups around the country, they just get involved because, well, I want to help in a small way, so I'll go and get trained up and I'll become a physical activity leader. And next thing you know, they're serving on a regional committee or their national secretary or their national president. It happens. You know, it's kind of addictive, this getting involved.
Like, totally. And of course, I think one of the things what it generates is a sense of purpose. And I think that that's what we all need. Like, literally a reason to get up out of bed in the morning, but also a sense of who I am. And who I am isn't confined to how much I'm earning or my day job, but it's about all of those facets of me in my family and in my community. So if I have a number of other things that are firstly interesting to me and perhaps stretching me slightly and also bringing joy, isn't that fantastic? I mean, that's what we all should be striving for in our lives.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Especially in retirement, when all those original factors that you spoke about, the how much do you earn, what do you do, then when that goes out the window, when you don't have that role associated with your name anymore, to find those other oomph factors, what gets you up out of bed, what makes you want to put on makeup or get dressed or go out, absolutely, and all of that is, to a certain extent, active citizenship.
Oh, and I need to apologise, Peter, because I didn't put on any makeup for this because we don't have a camera here.
It's not a visual medium, but you're looking very well. You're looking very well. The worst thing is, like, when you were saying I'm fitter now than I was in my 40s, I'm going, like, you know, he's telling the truth, but nobody will know because he looks great, but it's a podcast. He won't be able to.
But like, it is, isn't it, though? It is about that sense of, okay, what is going to inspire me now? And like, so we regularly say the key to happy aging is to keep moving physically, keep moving mentally and emotionally, and keep moving intellectually, you know, and whether that's doing the crossword or reading or, you know, learning a language. I mean, they're the classic things that people will suggest, but it's like, it's doing anything
that taxes the grey matter, that's it,
for sure. And I know somebody who's just started beekeeping. I'm thinking, oh my god, that sounds amazing.
Yeah,
you know,
it's fantastic. If you had the garden for it, wouldn't you? It's fantastic. And I'll add to that list, keep moving socially. Quite
absolutely
important as well.
And I think within that, it's make sure you have at least a couple of people who are older than you and a couple of people who are younger than you as well, because I think that that's really important too, you know. And a couple of my friends, they now say they don't know how they manage to fit a daytime job in because they're so busy, you know. So it can be, as you said, it can be absolutely addictive, this sense of volunteering and becoming a community activist. Yeah,
it's a sense of purpose, really, yeah. At the end of the day.
Yeah.
So Age and Opportunity do an awful lot to facilitate all of that, keeping moving physically through Go for Life, keeping moving, you know, intellectually, culturally, through the Bealtaine Festival and the likes. There's a whole plethora of things that Age and Opportunity are doing to keep people going. Can you tell us a little bit about some of that?
Yeah, so I mean, yes, I mean, like, I think our ethos is really about promoting participation by older people. And so we've chosen over the years to focus in on three main areas. So one of them, as you said, was it's now called ACTIVE, the programme, but it's physical activity. We train physical activity leaders. We also have a new-ish initiative, or the expansion of it is new, which is called Fitline. So that if, for instance, you don't feel like being part of a group, you can call this free phone number, which is 1-800-303-545. You need to make the call yourself. We don't want somebody phoning and saying, oh, my mammy would like this. Yeah. Your mammy needs to make the call. But then you'll be, you know, there'll be an initial phone call, and then a volunteer mentor will phone you every 2 weeks to check whether or how you are keeping up with the targets you've set for yourself. So it could be as simple as, OK, I'm going to walk to the shops 3 times a week instead of driving. Or it could equally be, I'm going to go to my local swimming pool once a week. Whatever it is you decide to do. And so that's another way of keeping physically active.
I really like that, because one of the things that we've experienced down the years in Active Retirement Ireland is really not being able to provide for the person who says, I'm not much of a joiner. I'm not really a group person. I like to play on my own furrow.
I totally get that. You know, I mean, I have often said I'm not a joiner, but then that depends on what it is I want to go and do. So, you know, there's like my mother would always say, well, I'm not a joiner. I have no interest in older people's groups. But then her local bridge club was full of people her own age and older, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, but she was going to play bridge. She didn't see herself as being part of an older person's, you know, group.
I think it comes back to finding that thing that you want to do.
Absolutely.
And that sense of purpose for you.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really count. I'm only down there to help out with this. Grand. Whatever gets you up and out in the morning. Absolutely.
Yeah. Or the number of older people say, well, I'm helping out the old people, you know, and like they themselves are in their 70s or 80s. Yeah. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, look, absolutely. Yeah. And one thing that Age and Opportunity have done now for many years, and it's a real world leader, is the Bealtaine Festival.
You're so right on that. I mean, I think we're the first of that kind of age-related community cooperative festival celebrating creativity as we age. It's inspired other similar. I was nearly going to say copied. I didn't mean that. It has inspired other countries to do similar things. So Bealtaine takes place throughout the whole month of May. The events take place like pretty much in every town and village in the country. And then, you know, our arts team also, they develop and curate their, you know, our own programme as well. And the last two Bealtaines have been online. It's been hugely successful. In fact, all of our activities have gone online, including another physical activity programme, which is Movement Minutes, which is on our Facebook page.
That's been really, really popular during the pandemic. Yeah. When people were locked down, to be able to look up on the Facebook page and look, I know how to get on Facebook, I know how to go to this page, and all of a sudden I've got an instructor telling me how to do chairobics, yoga.
Yeah, 15 minutes, 3 times a week with, you know, wonderful colleague Paul Gallagher and also Barbara Murphy. So they're fantastic. We also developed a number of other videos. So there's a 5 set of videos to promote resilience, which is also available on our YouTube channel. We have a series of art making at home videos as well. And in fact, we got funding this year from Creative Ireland. So we have enough funding left over to provide a number of people with a small art making kit, which we'll post to you. And so you get the kit and then you can watch the videos as well. So if you're interested in that, what I suggest is just phone our general telephone number, which is 01 805 7709. or write to email to info@ageandopportunity.com. I think we probably have about 30 more packs that, you know, people could apply for as well.
That's great.
And that was thanks to Creative Ireland funding, you know.
That's fantastic. An awful lot of success online. Just before we get to the end of the podcast, that does sort of leave the elephant in the room, the challenge that every organisation is going to have to face, that there is a huge cohort of older people who are not online, and we're going to have to get back in touch with them.
You're so right, Peter. And we applied to the Comic Relief Fund and were successful. So we were given funding to carry out a 5-county study on digital access / digital poverty among older people. So that is kicking off very soon, and it's taking place in counties Clare, Kildare, Kerry, Fingal in Dublin, and Donegal. Mm. So we'll be looking at whether, you know, for some people it's a matter of cost. For other people it's a matter of, well, I have a mobile phone, but it's not even a smartphone, so I've just never used one. And for other people, it could be that, the broadband infrastructure is terrible where they live.
There's so many reasons why it might not be a major factor in someone's life.
Yeah.
And we have to sort of take account of all of that. But for all the work you're doing on active citizenship, and it really is, it's a tremendous amount. It all comes back to the people involved themselves, the volunteers, the active citizens, the older people, the people involved in their communities. Are we underestimating the resource that we have on our hands as a nation, as a society?
I think society might be, but I think we in our sector know the value of older people being active. And what I also think is really important that we, as, you know, independent NGOs, but we still collaborate with each other as well, so that and I think there's been a great sense of collaboration between our respective organisations over the years. And I guess if I can just maybe mention one other group that we at Age and Opportunity want to work with more now, which is older travellers, and recognising that, you know, if you are in the traveller community, you're regarded as old at the age of 40, like not 65 or 70 in the settled community. And we really want to be a resource to older travellers as well, so that we can bring the benefits of our three programme areas into the lives of traveller people, and also older migrants in Ireland. And then, like one of my particular passions is also then older LGBTI people, so that we're able to bring about a much more inclusive society of all of us, wherever we come from, whoever we are.
I think that's a wonderful note to end it on. Ciarán McKinney, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Peter.
The Old Country is recorded in the podcast studios, McGuinness Place, Dublin 2. For more information, check out thepodcaststudios.ie. This podcast is brought to you by Active Retirement Ireland as part of the UN Decade of Healthy Ageing. This podcast is supported by the Community Foundation for Ireland, and thanks, as always, to our media partners, Alice PR.